set up already that this rapid reaction force will be pulled in from other countries
to deal.
They don't want to turn. They know.
Today's date is the 17th day of December 2008. My name is Daryl Bradford Smith. Great to have you here with me again for another important broadcast on world events and opening up the can of worms, if you will allow that to be stated here. It's the Pandora's box from hell, ladies and gentlemen. We are witnessing in our real-time events here in our world, the entire planet coming to a screeching halt. I'm going to discuss the BDI tonight, very important thing, the BDI. You don't know what that is, maybe. Many of you probably don't. Some of you do. We're going to talk a little bit about gold. We're going to talk about robbery and fraud and deception and bailouts. More bailouts of the criminals, more stiffing of the public purse and robbery of the public. But we're also going to talk about the potential for a serious implosion of our civil order. And I think we are on the very precipice as we speak of seeing martial law. I think the events in Greece are just a harbinger of events to come. So hang on to your hats. We have a great hour ahead of us. We're going to talk with our regular commentary, our comments from Mohammed Rafik. He's always he's on the money every time he speaks about these issues. So we're going to go right to Mohammed right now. Mohammed, are you with me?
I am indeed. Good evening, Daryl.
Good evening, Mohammed. You know, the first event I want to discuss with you is this Greek rioting. Now, the Greeks have a tradition of turning to the streets, much like the French. When things don't go their way, they don't like what's happening. They don't hold out. They leave their homes, go out in the streets, and wreck things. I can tell you here in France, if you make the French public mad, you can expect buildings to burn, you can expect cars to be tipped over, and you can expect problems everywhere. And it's already hitting Greece like this, but Spain has also found some eruptions happening, as well as Belgium has had some violence, and France has had some. Are we looking at the beginnings here of some blowback as a result of this economic problem, or is this, in your view, an isolated incident?
I don't think it's an isolated incident, Daryl. I think that what we're looking at are the areas of Europe where this is what I consider to be the last line of democracy, you know, where people take to the streets and demonstrate in the strongest terms possibly to their government that they really are not happy with the direction things are taking.
Yep.
Sometimes, Dal, you know, you can't make the omelette without breaking eggs, as the saying goes.
That's right.
Governments, we had the million-person march in this country, you know, against the war in Iraq.
Yep.
And they say of the British public that for each person walking, they're representing 50 people. So there's 50 people sat on the sofa who sympathise with what's going on, but they can't be bothered to walk. That's pretty much sums up the British people.
Mm.
So when there were a million people marching through London against the war in Iraq, it meant that 50 million people in this country felt that way. But in spite of that, Tony Blair decided that he was going to go along with the whole fiasco, which has ended up to just be a financial and military disaster.
And a genocide on top of it.
And the mass murder, which always comes with war.
Yeah.
Now, had there been a million people on the streets of London turning over cars, setting fire to policemen and buildings and whatever, and really letting the government know that we're not going to, if you keep going down this route, we'll be heading towards civil war, because that's what rioting is. It's basically telling the government that, you know, you're going in a direction which is so unpopular with the people that we move to action, and it's hit off in these flashpoints. And obviously the death of the youth, the murder of this young boy by the Greek police was the catalyst.
Yeah.
But I think, Daryl, you know, there are deeper feelings going on here.
Yeah.
And the Greek youth have, you know, one has to stand in admiration of them for going out and actually standing up for this, their rights against this police murder. We just had, I'm sure many people are aware, but you'll be aware, Daryl, that Mr. Mendes, Charles Mendes, who was murdered by the police on Stockwell Underground Station, the jury were told by the coroners that they weren't allowed to find a verdict of unlawful killing.
That's right.
So, you know, we're allowed to have theoretically an inquest into the cause of death, but then they're told you're not allowed to say that the killing was unlawful.
Well, that's the end of the grand jury system, which the Magna Carta set out in our earliest laws, that set apart that stopped the royals or the elites from killing people without. Well, without retribution, and now that we've reversed ourselves now, and now the retribution will not be meted out because the Magna Carta's whole principles have been undermined.
Exactly, and I find it saddening to see that the British people stand by whilst we go through this pantomime of legalizing what the police have done.
Yep.
And in Greece, they just reacted straight away and said, we're not going to put up with this. We don't care what your excuses are. We don't care what your rationale is. We've got somebody dead, and there's no reason for that. You know, this guy was unarmed, could have easily been arrested, thousands of people are arrested every day in this country, easily just been arrested and frog-marched off to the nearest police car and driven to the police station. That's what happens when we don't actually follow that, and then we allow the police to take guns in this country, which is quite rare because the criminals don't have guns ordinarily in this country. We're fairly much a gun-free area, but when the police are allowed to take guns and then just put 8 bullets into the back of somebody's head while 2 other policemen are holding him down, and we can't find the coroner, we can't find at the coroner's court that unlawful killing is a legitimate verdict. You realise that the whole sham process is there in something known as soft soaping, Daryl.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we say we use the soft soap, so people feel really upset and angry about something, but we just slowly, softly rub this soap around, and slowly but surely, you know, we can lose all those angry feelings and not feel bad about anything and not feel angry. And look, we did have an inquiry into this, and this was the result. In reality, the people in this country, we should have 1 million people on the streets of London over the death of this one man, even.
That's right.
And the conduct of the police. So,
you're forgetting to mention something very important here, Mohammed, that in weeks in advance of this, just a few weeks in advance of this murder, of this assassination, of this this young man was an electrician that they believe worked on, possibly on the preparation for the 7/7 attack, but the people who murdered him had just come back from training in none other than Israel, and they were being trained on crowd control and anti-insurgency training. So they came back with their blood all boiled up, ready to kill, at the hands of the Israeli training apparatchik, and they acted out on orders. I'm certain on orders to get rid of this guy because he was involved with the power, the electricity, and all the rest of it that happened on that 7/7 morning. There you go.
That's quite possibly true. I wouldn't refute that. Also, you know, just coming back from Israeli-style training with the Palestinians, you know, we all see Palestinian children and women being murdered in cold blood, almost like some kind of chicken shoot sport. And it's hardly surprising that anybody who goes for training in that kind of area comes back and behaves like this. Having said that, it is still this country. It's not the Gaza Strip or Ramallah where anything goes because there is no system behind it all. with supposed check and balances. And now we have, you know, this family actually saying unlawful killing. I don't know if people saw that, you know, members of his family actually turned up and although they weren't allowed to speak or give any evidence, they all wore T-shirts that said unlawful killing, even though the jury had been legally prevented from finding that as a decision.
Yeah.
So I'm pleased to see that certain parts of Europe are standing up against this form of oppression, which is on the steady slope to tyranny, I think, Darrell.
It is.
We're looking at tyranny without this kind of direct action,
and
which demonstrates the humanity of people fighting against this this totalitarian approach of government, whereby the government isn't representing the interests of the people, but is rather trying to dominate, control, and tell them what to do.
Well, you know, they're going to rue the day in Britain that they gave up their gun rights. And in fact, a country that gives up their gun rights to their government is a perfect setup for tyranny. And of course, you know exactly, that's exactly what has happened in Britain. These people ran the false terrorism attacks in the Oma bombing and the rest of it. That was, there were MI6 and MI5 people all around those events. They knew in advance of most of these problems. They used them. They used that Northern Ireland problem as a way of frightening the public into giving away all of their civil liberties as well as all of their gun rights. And we're seeing a repeat of this in the United States right now. And because they used Britain as a laboratory on how to remove civil liberties and put people into a surveillance society without them fighting back about it and removing their guns. And now you watch this over a 15-year period. Hunting rifles, hunting has been made all but illegal. People have been, anybody who hunts now is seen as a barbarian, as an ignorant ignoramus and a macho fool and the rest of it. And instead of what we got is a bunch of limp-wristed feminine men on our television screens. Half of them sound like they lisp. And they give you the foofiness and the whole bit. Now, you know, I'm not against gay people. I could care less whether somebody's gay or not. I'm talking about the conspiracy to make people act gay even when they are not, and take away masculinity. On top of that, we see the removal of people's rights to adjudicate properly in the courtroom, the elimination of Magna Carta, and now it's all coming home to roost in the United States in almost a parallel form. Not dissimilar from the parallels that you found in 9/11 in 7/7. You know, Britain and America are on a similar path in this world, and it's a path to tyranny and complete control by a group of elites, and it sickens me to see it.
Indeed, it is sickening, Darrell, and it is a shame that they've found the methods of success in the UK, which they're now trying to export as mechanisms to the rest of the world.
Yep.
The good news is that, you know, there is resistance in other parts of the world to the mechanism because it's being seen for what it is. We had, because it's been trial and error in this country, we've had 30 to 40 years of them amending laws and changing laws and bringing in laws and deleting laws and trying all these different things. So it's been a very, very gradual process.
Yeah.
And that's why we haven't noticed it, whereas they're trying to bring it in kind of overnight in other places, and people just, or in other countries, they're just saying, well, hold on a minute, what's this? We don't recognize this. We're not going to give in to this. We're not going to accept it.
Well, I can tell you definitively that here in France, you will not take the guns out of the French countryside. There is just absolutely no way the French will give their guns up. They're wed to their hunting. Hunting here is probably the most popular activity in outside the cities. I mean, it is not participated in by just a few, but by almost every man. And so the rifle and the shotgun and even other types of weaponry are not going away here. So the French have a very different problem that they're facing to get people to turn in their rifles and guns. And the next thing is that I could never see the French military or even the system of gendarmes, which is part of the military, turning against the French public for any sustained period of time. They might quell some violence in the major cities, but they'll never turn on their public. I don't believe they will. So if this stuff starts really boiling over in France, they are going to face a very, very different outcome than what has happened in Britain, I assure them. And I can tell the listeners what will transpire here will make the world proud. Yeah.
Well, I would say now that the history of gun ownership in France since the Second World War has been very important to reinforcing the idea of French resistance. You know, when people talk about wars and the idea of something being a cakewalk, the only thing that was really a cakewalk was the German invasion of France during the Second World War, which took literally a matter of days using the Panzer tanks. So the encouragement of the French state post-Second World War to Frenchmen owning their own guns and firing them is very much a French way of avoiding conscription. Just say, well, you know, keep your eye in, use your guns regularly, don't be afraid of the sounds, and be prepared, at least from the perspective of being able to handle a weapon.
Yep.
It's one way of staying away from conscription. So a lot of sense in that, and one of the reasons why the French should never abandon their approach to weapons.
Well,
it is an easy country to invade, being landlocked as it is on the back quarters.
Well, you know, you don't live in the East End, so you haven't heard gunshots in a long time, Mohammed. But I hear gunshots every day around where I live, every day, and I would tell you maybe 30 to 50 shots of rifle fire go off in my area every day. And you know, because there are people throughout my neighborhood and my woodlands around me with guns. And that's a fact. And people are willing to point at something, pull the trigger, and so they are ready for what's happening. As soon as the government decides that they would like to become more tyrannical, the people around me will not stand for it, I'm certain. And interestingly enough, the gendarmes out here in the countryside are really wed to their rural lifestyle. They're not city folk. And I don't see them backing the present regime in Paris. In fact, the gendarmes right now are at odds with the Parisian government because of so many backstabbing events that have taken place. So France is going to, when it erupts here, it could be a real showcase for fighting back against these crooks. Now, the country that saddens me the most, and there are many listeners that have tuned into the French Connection through Anonymous and the rest of the places, because a lot of what I say is banned in Germany, especially in the public internet areas. But they have been the biggest disappointment to me that I could have ever imagined. You know, when they claim that Merkel still has a 60% approval rate, when she is one of the biggest cow towers to these criminal Zionists of all of Europe. And it sickens me to think that a country so proud of its long heritage of standing up against, you know, other things. I mean, we talk about Hitler, yes. You know, they bought into the story of Hitler and the rest of it, and the guy was a tyrant. And often, you know, if you take a look at it, you can find out that he was also financed by Zionist Jews. But where in the heck are the Germans in this fight? They are the country that I've been waiting to wake up, and it doesn't seem to me that the rank and file is turning their attention to this, Mohammed.
Well, I have to agree with you there, Darrell. It would appear that there are certain elements of the German population which are standing up, but they're standing up very slowly. And it may be because of the pressures put on them, starting even in the junior schools, you know, with children very young being given this idea that, you know, they're descendants of monsters, that their antecedents are, you know, people, probably the worst people that ever walked on the face of the earth, etc., etc., etc. They're brought up to live under guilt. the Jews made sure that the school syllabus in Germany means that, you know, there are liberal dosages and lashings of guilt and fear of criticizing the Jews. And, you know, this is all part of the technique. I suppose when the Jews were saying between the First and Second World Wars that Germany needed to be brought to its knees and destroyed, was because they were the biggest military might in Europe at that time. And they were also, you know, well tuned in to a lot of the mischief that was going on in their own society. I think Germans today will watch Jews actually commit crime and then find some kind of moral obligation within themselves to overlook the crime.
Yep.
So, for instance, we see the German government supplying 6 submarines to the Israeli state,
yep,
which is known to be the last bastion of apartheid in the world, and openly racist, certainly Nazi in their approach to policing and treatment of people.
Yep.
We see even Jews that don't go along with what they say, you know, thrown out of the country, like Professor Norman Finkelstein, who I don't think is the greatest anti-Zionist in the world, but even for just voicing a little bit of dissent, they get thrown out.
Yeah.
So, you know, when we see that states are causing so much oppression to other people, it's amazing how people who've been programmed to have so much guilt about oppression and tyrants and tyranny, on the one hand, are yet still openly sponsoring and supporting it on the other.
Yep, yep.
They're a seriously messed up group of people, Darryl.
Well, let me tell you that there's some other hot spots in Europe that people rarely talk about. The Hungarians have been balking for the last year against the Zionist control of Buda and Pest. And the whole city of Budapest is right now under almost a martial law setup because of the resistance that has been growing against their Jewish Zionist controllers. And they've had lots of trouble there. Now, I'm going to urge the listener to understand that the Chabad Lubavitch are present in all of these places. The Greeks should start turning their ire toward these Lubies in Athens and elsewhere. They should be rooted out, found out, outed in Budapest. They should be looked at in what they're doing here in Paris, in Bonn, in Berlin, and anywhere you can, in Geneva. The people that want freedom and want their countries back and want nationalism to reign, not this European Union lie or this world government sickness, they have to start getting rid of this Lubavitch group, who are responsible for protecting, as Sayanem, the criminal gangs as they go around the world unscathed, as after they commit heinous acts of assassination, of crime, of smuggling, of drug peddling, of pedophilia, of pornography. This is just a big front for these crooks, Mohammed. You want to speak to that?
Well, one of the problems, as we mentioned before, is the fact that these Zoharites have misled everybody, even elements of the Jewish community itself.
Yeah, yeah.
And because of the way they dress, the clothing that they have, they adopted this Hasidic outfit look, you know, with hats, with the curly hair and the long black trench coats. They look like they're some kind of religious group, and again, that's, you don't expect people like that to be walking around with a suitcase full of methamphetamine or their clothes to be full of ecstasy tablets.
That's right.
And because of that aura of religious respectability that they've been trading under, they've got away with it. And we can add on to that all the other crimes, like you said, Darryl, the money laundering, and of course the sponsoring of terrorism. And one of the main purposes of the 40,000 outlets that they have throughout the world, for want of...
About 2,600 outlets.
I think you'll find that those are kind of like the major posts. Out beyond that, in this sort of reach into the community, it's estimated that it goes to about 40,000. Not just the Chabad centres. I mean, straightforward Chabad centres, yes, there's probably 2,000 or 3,000 of those there, so that's probably correct. But for each one of those, they've got 10 or more little cells set up in different parts of the country, so you can be fairly sure that the Chabad Centre in Mumbai, for instance, was controlling in other major cities small cells who were keeping an eye on things, because it is, of course, a massive spy network.
Yeah.
And we mustn't forget that one of the primary things that they use these things for are feedback. You know, they want to know what's going on in the ground, on the ground in particular towns. Who are the neo-Nazis in downtown Bradford? So, you know, they want to know the names. So somebody down there, it's their job to go and infiltrate, you know, the National Front offices in Bradford, or they hear about the right wing on the move in another town. They have people to go around and join these groups, you see. So they have cells that reach way beyond just those centres. And everything from spying to terrorism and this latest Mumbai attack. I mean, it's absolutely mocked across the internet, the official story. Everybody and anybody who looks at this can see it's just total fraud. These guys didn't arrive on two boats, and then they killed. You know, from the boats, Darryl, the official story is that they actually got in two taxis. Can you seriously imagine 10 US Marines arriving on the coast of Iran in their sort of black ops speedboats, getting out the other end armed to the teeth with guns and hand grenades, and hailing a couple of cabs to take them to Iran?
Especially one of these three-wheelers, you know, with their ammunition baskets up on the roof, you know, going through Mumbai, saying, "Oh, we're heading to the Jewish center." Oh, boy, you know, these people are never going to go down without a fight. So what we can expect them to turn up the mayhem and the sickness in the streets. I want to bring up another thing that we've been watching with this Madoff scandal. Now, I talked to you earlier about this, and it seems to me there are so many things about this scandal that don't make sense. One of them is that his sons turned him in. That, for to me, right away raised a big flag to me. However, the fact is, it's probably a bigger losses that they're going to attribute to him than they're even there. They're going to, you know, a lot of the banks are going to pile. And do you remember when the failure happened of the Northern Rock, and you and I both talked, and I said, watch, every bit of bad paper they can possibly toss on top of Northern Rock is going to be tossed there, whether Northern Rock had anything to do with it or not. Well, what's happening now is so many crimes and scams have been committed by this Jewish community that this guy Madoff is becoming a repository for every scam guy that wants to dump his paper someplace. Oh, it's Madoff did it, not me. You know.
I think, Darryl, that Madoff actually is not a Ponzi scheme. I think that what's actually happened is that as a hedge fund, and we must remember that his fund was a hedge fund, I think that he's just gone broke. I think that he's actually lost the money. He's like so many failed companies, just another failed company. The problem is that he's managing money belonging to wealthy members of the Jewish community, and he's doing a bit of a Jack Ruby. You know, what he's saying is, okay, I'll go down for this. I'll tell everybody it was a Ponzi scheme. You hand me in as a Ponzi scheme, and then at least we'll be entitled to compensation and you'll get your money back. If we have to tell the world that I just lost the money through bad investments, you won't get a penny back. And I believe it's not a Ponzi scheme at all, Darryl. I've looked more closely into this since we spoke earlier today, and I'm utterly convinced. The amount of due diligence that has to be done by financial institutions before they can put their money into a scheme like that. It is impossible that they would not have had the report and accounts, because they have standard practices. If somebody came to me when I was at Deutsche Bank or at Rabobank or at Merrill Lynch and said, oh, we want to put a couple hundred million with this guy here, I'd say, okay, make the case. And just like anybody else, those documents would have been submitted to the credit risk department. It's not a Ponzi scheme. What they've had to do is trash all the paperwork so that they can lose all the paperwork and say, oh, we've got no reports and accounts, but I'm pleading guilty to a Ponzi scheme. It was a Ponzi scheme, honest. We've not seen any evidence to the fact that it is a Ponzi scheme. All the evidence that would demonstrate it was a Ponzi scheme have been destroyed. And all we have is admission of guilt, and on the basis of his admission of guilt alone, we have a judge in the United States saying, oh, this fund, the investors in this one are entitled to compensation because it was a fraud.
Yeah, the Enron laws that were passed after the fraud for Enron, they said some people are going to be able to get a redress some of their losses. However, you know, this guy was a fund of funds. In other words, he was a fund that was supposed to be investing in other fund instruments. So the fact of the matter is, you would expect a fund like his to have taken it on the chin like 60%. It's a 60-70% loss right now, evident in most of these hedge funds and derivative funded companies. So, you know, you may be exactly right, and this may have been the intent the whole time, that they were turned around and said, now everybody can get some of their money back. I don't know how much money you get back under that scheme. It's certainly not 100%, but it doesn't matter. I mean, these people were facing probably 60-70% loss or more.
Well, Daryl, if this guy was playing, say, options going in the wrong direction on the type of falls, and somebody has been shorting and doing calls when they should have been doing puts and selling puts when they shouldn't have been, you know, people have been selling on the back of this market in the wrong direction. And those kind of falls, Daryl, have been wiping institutions out.
Yeah.
I reckon this guy might have been writing puts or something like that, or writing calls, and actually destroyed the entire fund through the derivative side of it, because 60-70% loss on the equity holding, yeah, but if he was trying to increase the receipts of that fund by actually selling people the right to buy stock that they just couldn't afford to cover in the end, which is most likely, there are funds out there that operate like that. If he was operating like that, he could have easily blown 150% of the amount of money that he had under investment.
Well, anybody in who's ever been in the market, you know, anybody who's played the market for real, in the 80s and in the 90s, I was in the market as often as I could be, and you know, I had a 5-to-1 margin on my deposit. Now, you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, that when you're holding only 20% on your investment in real cash, something going south on you just a few percentage points takes a horrendous bite out of your principal. And you have no idea. Now, these guys were leveraged far more than that. So a small movement in the wrong direction on a bad put or call option would be taking massive amounts of their reserve capital out of their hands, further stressing the remaining capital they had to claw back some of these some of the losses. And it can go badly wrong very quickly, Mohammed. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I believe, you know, they're talking about 700 hedge funds between now and the end of this year, early, but by before January, 700, some 30% plus of all the hedge funds in the world are going to be going out of business. He was operating a hedge fund. I think what he's done is he said, let's get out before all the other news starts coming out, so we're not just another hedge fund lost in the middle. Let's be the first one, and let's tell everybody that it was a Ponzi scheme. And let's not say we've gone broke through bad management, destroyed the records, and let me tell everybody it was a Ponzi scheme for the last 20 years. I can tell you, Daryl, as somebody who's approved credit lines in banks before now, you know, you when somebody like HSBC come up and say, we want to put $1 billion, $1,000 million with